Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Want to return first to Ukraine and Russia, where hopes for a ceasefire hang in the balance. Hopes that were dealt a blow overnight as Russia launched one of its most intense attacks on Kyiv in months. So as peace talks continue and the US pressure mounts on Ukraine, the question now is a deal on the horizon or is it just a political mirage? President Trump has been speaking in the Oval Office, where he still believes a deal can be done.
I think Russia is ready, and a lot of people said Russia wanted to go for the whole thing. And I think we have a deal with Russia. We have to get a deal with Zelensky, and I hope that Zelensky, I thought it might be easier to deal with Zelensky. So far, it's been harder, but that's okay. It's all right. But I think we have a deal with both.
Joining me now, Sviatoslav Jurash, Ukrainian MP with the President Zelensky's Servant of the People Party and Chair of the Irish-Ukrainian Friendship Group. And I'm also joined by Roland Oliphant, Chief Foreign Analyst at The Telegraph. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for taking our calls this morning. Sviatoslav, what happened in Kyiv overnight? How is the mood this morning?
It is very clear that Russia doesn't want any peace with this barrage of attacks that killed so many, injured so many. But it continues. Every single day these news come from all over Ukraine. Russia is nowhere near either stopping the war or de-escalating. The mood in Ukraine is very much clear. We understand Russia is not to be trusted, and we understand that agreements with them are not worth the paper they are signed on. And we've seen that too many times, because right before the full-scale invasion, we had 8 years of negotiations with them. As a response to that, they invaded us. So we are in a situation where we try to talk to Americans and to other partners that we need to have more on the table than just a piece of paper, whatever comes about.
I understand the defiance, but people must be weary and really searching for peace at this stage.
They are weary of illusions, imagining that signing a piece of paper makes a difference to Russia. It has broken so many agreements and so many deals that it's not something we can rely on. And talking with various people from my military unit, for example, it's very easy to understand that they are in no mood to try and entertain illusions that deals with Russia is something we can put forward as the vision for the future.
President Trump says that Zelensky's refusal to accept what's on the table now will do nothing but prolong the conflict. What's your reaction to that?
My reaction is that exactly illusions of the acceptance of Russian ideas about Ukraine should be is something that allow Russia to imagine it can attack Ukraine, it can take more of Ukraine, and it can seize the whole country, as Mr. Putin states in his essays that he has written in his video addresses. So the point is, this display of weakness to Russian position is something that invites Russia to continue its aggression and destroy more Ukrainian homes, kill more Ukrainian people, and cause more havoc on the world.
Sviatoslav, I'd like to go into a little bit more detail on what will and won't wash with you, with the Ukrainian people. If you wouldn't mind, though, holding on, let's just talk briefly, if we can, to Roland Oliphant from The Telegraph. Roland, are we in what diplomats and what politicians now call the tunnel, where all of the participants are kettled together, basically, and forced to endure each other until either a deal is done or everything falls apart?
I mean, we've been there since the beginning of the war, haven't we? I know there haven't been talks going on, but the truth is we don't know the answer to that until a deal is done. At the end of the day, there is a sense that this year, there has always been a sense that this year might be the year that fighting ends. And even the Biden administration was preparing for that in a very different way to the Trump administration. But the assumption was, I think, in Kyiv and in the West and in Moscow, that 2025 might be the year that, you know, the fighting ends in one way or another, at least for now. I think events over the past few days, the past kind of 48 hours really, have definitely dealt a blow to that. I think there was a sense that some deal could be done soon. Things didn't go as they were meant to in London yesterday. And I think that's partly down, frankly, to you know, there are certain red lines that President Zelensky or any Ukrainian government is going to find difficult to deal with, but also the Europeans would find difficult to deal with. And one of those is as President Zelensky said, recognizing Russia's annexation of Crimea. That is a really serious issue, and not just for the Ukrainians.
What is on the table at the moment seems to give everything to Russia and really nothing to Ukraine. Is that a miscalculation on the Americans' part, that they aren't giving Zelensky something to sell to his own people?
I think that's a massive issue here. And you can kind of... Let me illustrate it two ways. Okay, Vladimir Putin took Russia into a war promising Kiev in 3 days, a very quick victory and so on. Said, you know, he's got 800,000 casualties in the space of 3 years. The Kursk region has been occupied. The Black Sea Fleet's flagship has been sunk. There's constant bombardments of Russia. And yet he hasn't really suffered any kind of political blowback from all of that. He's got a lot of domestic room for maneuver. President Zelensky is a president of a genuine democracy. He does answer to the electorate, and there is a Ukrainian constitution that dictates certain things. So if you want him to do things that are going to be unpopular, to make unpalatable compromises, you're going to have to give him something that his voters and his electorate can look at as a win. And I think you're quite right. I think as Sviatoslav was just mentioning, the real key thing that all Ukrainians mention when I talk to them, no matter what their kind of political views, is the security guarantees. This sense that, look, the only thing that is going to stop this happening again, it's not going to be, as Sviatoslav said, a bit of paper, it's going to be guns, tanks, real hard security. And a lot of people I've spoken to have said things like, look, we could stomach the idea of the Russians hanging on to Crimea and the parts of the country they've occupied de facto, as long as we have this guarantee to prevent them attacking us again.
Okay, so then it really comes down to European preparedness. Is the coalition of the willing at the moment anything other than a nice idea on paper?
To be absolutely honest with you, I don't know, and I think that's part of the problem. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about it. There've been a lot of high-level meetings, between in London, in Paris, in other places. There've been a lot of, announcements about, back of the envelope calculations about X many troops and where they might be deployed and things like that. But we're still no clear on what it actually might be, because there are big dilemmas about rules of engagement and so on. So I think the reason for that opaqueness, in a way, is that they're just not there yet.
And let's be clear about this. It would take more than just France and the UK. It would require Italian, German, Dutch and Spanish boots as well.
It would require a large contribution. I think the figures we're looking at, we're seeing like the Brits and the French putting in the biggest contribution, but there's got to be another contribution from other parts of Europe as well. What Britain and France are saying is that we know this is going to have to be a coalition of the willing, because not every country in Europe is willing to do that. It's got to be countries who are up for it. As it were.
Okay. Certainly at the moment it looks like Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron are up for it, but would it be right to say that everybody else is just pretty much in listening mode?
The polls, the some of the East European countries, the Nordics, they are fairly interested in this kind of thing. There's a lot more kind of leeriness, perhaps in Germany, especially like the Italians and the Spanish have been, talking about a reluctance to put their troops in harm's way. And kind of an understandably, because the question is, what are these troops there to do? Are they there to deter? Okay, if you want to deter, it means you don't want them to fight. But to deter, you have to be ready to fight. You've got to be ready, if you have to get in a scrap with the Russians. And that's high-risk business.
Okay. Roland Oliphant from Telegraph, thank you very much for talking to us. Sviatoslav, are you still with us? Sviatoslav Jurash, I was hoping to be able to go back to you and talk to you about red lines, but it looks like we're ringing him back is what it looks like. So unless he answers straight away, what I think I might do is take a break and see if we can get him back up on the line.